The UW Health Transplant Center in Madison is one of only six centers in the nation that's actively transplanting vital organs like hearts, kidneys, and livers for adults and kids. I'm Jill Najoe on the Ideas Network. Today, we're talking with two leading doctors from the Transplant Center. We'd like to welcome Dr. Joshua Hermsen. He's a UW Health Kids Pediatric Cardiac Surgeon and an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, the Department of Surgery. He and also is Dr. Sonia Kermani. She is a UW Health Pediatric Cardiologist and an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics, Division of Cardiology at the UW School of Health and Public Medicine. And as we talk to them, well, we'd like to hear from you. So have you been the recipient of an organ donation or maybe somebody in your family? What was your experience like? What questions do you have about transplanting? Call 800-642-123. Or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Well, thanks for joining us, Dr. Kermani and Dr. Hermsen. We appreciate you taking your time today. I know you are all so busy.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You bet. So let's talk about the UW Health Transplant Center. It just opened in June, so this is relatively new. Dr. Kermani, what's the significance of having a center like this in Wisconsin?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And I guess just to clarify, the UW Health Transplant Center itself has been open, I think, since the 80s, right, Josh? Maybe a little bit more than that. But what is new for us is that the pediatric heart transplant program was launched.
Okay.
So that is new, but definitely there's a strong and long history of transplant on both pediatrics and adults at UW Health. So, but we are really excited to now have this pediatric heart transplant program where we can really keep our patients here in the Madison area in South Central Wisconsin and really give them the advanced heart failure services and heart transplant services that they need. Formerly, we had to unfortunately refer kids out to other centers that would offer this. So it's really neat to finally be able to keep our kids and our families here.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's so difficult for families to have to travel with their children for healthcare, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly there's the concept of a medical home. And for kids who eventually need heart transplant and such, they've already very much established within a center. So it is hard to be to have to at least go out to another center and develop new relationships and such and trust in the medical team.
That's so important. Dr. Hermsen, what can lead to a younger person, a child, a kid, having to have a heart transplant?
Yeah, great question. There's a number of different things. Some kids that are born with heart defects, congenital heart disease, go on to need transplants, sometimes very early in life, sometimes during the toddler or childhood years, sometimes as teenagers, sometimes even as adults, from kind of the chronic effects of those different diseases. Then there's a group of kids who, like some adults, develop what we call a dilated cardiomyopathy, where the heart kind of loses its shape and weakens and doesn't pump as well. And then there are some, smaller number of children with infections that can affect the heart and make the heart not function well, or, you know, even more atypical things like serious heart rhythm problems that we can't control by other means. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure. What is the difference really between adult who needs a transplant and a kid that needs a transplant? I mean, what are the factors that you have to consider? Which one?
I'll let Dr. Kermani talk about that. Okay. First.
Okay, go ahead.
Sounds good. That's a really excellent question. Unfortunately, we know that kids aren't small adults in this field. And so it is really different for a pediatric heart transplant than adult heart transplant. Both as Dr. Hermsen alluded to, as far as, you know, the way kids present and the diseases, but then also there's different characteristics in regards to donors and the transplant process itself. Thankfully, life after transplant can be pretty similar as for folks who've had an adult heart transplant, but there's just some unique things to taking care of kids.
Mm-hmm. And the surgery's got to be more difficult, I would think, with such small, small little things.
Sometimes, yes. I mean, okay. Some of the children, especially the children that were born with a heart defect, sometimes have had multiple operations before they get to transplant. And that, you know, causes scar to build up around the heart. And that always makes the surgery a little bit more difficult. Sometimes those diseases have led to, you know, the blood flow, the body trying to find shortcuts for blood flow, which complicates some of the operative steps and mm-hmm. management.
You know, I always find it interesting to speak with people about how they got into their professions. Tell me a little bit about how both of you got into this particular field. Dr. Marnie, why don't you start first?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think there's sometimes things choose you, for lack of better words. And, you know, all through my training and such, it was a patient population that I had very early exposure to in the trajectory of my training and really connected with. For me, it's, you know, really lifelong care of a kid and their family. And just the connection that you build with them. And we get to support kids and families through some of the worst times, but then also see them doing really well and thriving as well. So it's a pretty unique circumstance for a physician and a medical team. And that's always really resonated well with me.
Dr. Hermson, what about you?
The short story is I had surgery for like a common childhood thing not related to the heart when I was 6, and I remember laying there before they put me to sleep thinking, man, this looks pretty cool. And I just had a fascination with surgery ever thereafter. Now how I got to, you know, be a pediatric heart surgeon is more luck than intent, which is kind of crazy. There's only about 200 of us in the country that do this work, and I mean, literally kind of stumbled into it. But that's a longer story.
Hopefully it wasn't during surgery that you did the stumbling, but.
No. I was gonna say, I think it chose Dr. Hermson too.
Yeah. It tends to be the case, right? We have to be kind of open to the possibilities. You never can tell. So you must hear all kinds of different stories and different outcomes and how people's lives are affected. Do you have any favorite kind of, or one that really resonates with you that you can share with our listeners? Either one of you can start if you can think of something. I know I'm kind of put you on the spot here, but no names, obviously, but go ahead. No, I can let you think about it.
Oh, I was trying to see who was going to actually talk.
Oh,
first.
You go ahead, Sonia.
Yeah, I think there's sort of some very common themes to the stories that I've taken care of. And some of the ones that end up being the most rewarding are also very challenging, too. And it's really amazing when you have a kid who just has not been feeling well and struggling with their heart failure. And unfortunately, there's only so much you can do for heart failure treatment. And when you can really help a kid out, either with a ventricular assist device or a heart.
Oh, I think she froze up a
little
really
bit. And really just there see them thrive a little bit more. On the outside, go to school, go back to playing sports, and, you know, see them graduate college, all those really wonderful things. Those are the stories that really stick with me and keep me going.
Sure. Dr. Hermson, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have a favorite pediatric story yet of our patients, because we have two patients on the waiting list, but we haven't transplanted either one of them yet. But I'm also involved in the transplant program here on the adult heart transplant side. And my favorite story there is it was a couple years ago. gentleman had a big heart attack while hunting, and that led to a long hospital stay and a series of interventions and operations and trials and tribulations, like Dr. Kamani had alluded to. And, you know, there's really, you look back and say, there's no reason this person should have survived. But he did. And the following fall, I was forwarded a Facebook post, you know, that showed him, you know, with a nice deer that he had killed, you know, kind of 1 year almost exactly later, which just is a very Wisconsin story.
Yes.
But that's why we do this, sure, to return people to the things they love and you know, to their life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easy for us to forget, because we only see them, you know, mostly in the hospital when they're ill, that happens, and it's pretty cool. And actually, I hadn't grown up hunting. I'd never been hunting, never had any interest, but this kind of inspired me. And I reached out to him, and he's, you know, kind of mentored me. And now a couple of years of, you know, been hunting with him and his brother. And it's really, it's very cool. I think all around for everybody. So,
yeah, it must be very rewarding when you have that follow up with your patients.
Surgeon almost never happens.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's like, yeah, somebody behind a mask and you never see them again. So, yeah, that's great. That was a very good story. So thank you both for your very good stories. We're going to be talking a little bit more, obviously, about maybe donating and whatnot. But we're going to be doing a quick break here for the news coming up. But just quickly, if someone wants to know more about the program, where do they go?
So there's a couple ways. Google is a great way to just Google us, and we'll come up for you. And we've got a really great website with all our contact information and everything. And then the other way is really directly through the UW Health Transfer Center, or Transplant Center, I should say. And mm-hmm. then they'll connect folks with us for any questions.
Perfect. Thank you. We'll be back. Nancy and Grafton, hold on till after the news. We've been talking with Dr. Joshua Hermsen, a UW Health Kids Pediatric Cardiac Surgeon and an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Sonia Kamarni, a UW Health Pediatric Cardiologist and an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics Division of Cardiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So join the conversation. 800-642-1234, and we'll be back right after the news. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about organ transplants on the show today. Our guests are Dr. Sonia Kamarni. She's a UW Health Pediatric Cardiologist and Assistant Professor in the Department of Pediatrics Division of Cardiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Dr. Joshua Hermsen. He's a UW Health Kids Pediatric Cardiac Surgeon and an Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Department of Surgery. Have you or a loved one received an organ transplant? Well, we'd love to hear your story. What was the experience like? How did things turn out? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go straight over to Nancy and Grafton, who's been patiently waiting. Thanks, Nancy. What do you have for us?
Okay, back in 2000, my son Leo was a pretty good mechanic. Well, he got called down to the river here in Grafton. Somebody said, my snowmobile isn't working. So 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, Leo goes down, and he gets on the snowmobile to see what the heck is the matter with it. Well, it went down on the ice, you know, down the river on the ice, and all of a sudden it would not turn. It would not stop. It broke through the ice, and Leo was under the water, and he was drowning. Well, the rescue squad came, and they took him from one hospital to the other, and they tried to bring him back, but they couldn't. But the only thing that they could get to save were his eyes. Now, Leo had been a fisherman in Alaska, so whoever got these eyes had those eyes saw really nice trips up there in Alaska, I'll tell you, fishing. But the other thing I wanted to know was all these abortions that are being done all over, what do they do with these body parts? Do they ever save anything, or what do they do with them? And that's my question.
Okay, thank you, Nancy, and I'm so sorry for your loss. That's a heartbreaker for sure. But there was a happy part of it in that someone else's eyesight was saved. As far as the actual, you know, organs from maybe fetuses or what have you, is that anything that you two would have any experience with or want to comment on?
No.
Yeah.
No, that...
kind of out of your range there.
I don't know the answer to Nancy's question, but not in the realm of transplant. And Nancy, thank you for sharing that story. So sorry, but I'll tell you, my grandfather lived in Wisconsin most of his life, and he was a Lions Club member, and he used to drive donor eyes between outlying hospitals and the hospital in Madison here. So. It's a beautiful gift when people can donate and help other humans.
Yeah, it is. What can you say to people who are listening? I mean, obviously, Dr. Hermsen, you said that you have two kids right now waiting. Is that because there is no hearts available? Is that why, or is there other medical reasons?
That's a good question. It takes a while, depending on the circumstances, but kids tend to wait a long time when they need organ transplant, because there's, overall in transplant, there's a mismatch between the number of people who need organs and the number of organ donors. But that's accentuated in kids because, especially for the small kids, they need a small donor.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, luckily, it's a pretty rare thing for a child to die and become an organ donor.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to wait a while. So we've really been active at our center here for a couple months, so it's not surprising that we haven't gotten those kids transplanted.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Karmani, what can you say to people who are maybe hesitant to be a donor? What are some of the things that can maybe stop people, and what can you say to them to encourage them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, becoming an organ donor, I understand, is a very personal decision, and there's a lot that folks weigh into it. I do recommend for anyone who is interested in organ donation, there's really great information out there from the organ procurement organizations and such, and you can certainly mark on your driver's license and all those other great ways that you are interested in becoming an organ donor should you unfortunately pass. The truth and the transparency of the matter is organ donation saves lives. A single organ donor can save 5-6 lives with the health of the organs that are donated, and it's pretty incredible to be able to give that gift of life to a child and another adult, and that legacy lives on. For sure, and I've definitely had families that have connected with organ donor families and formed some really amazing relationships and ways that they still honor the loved one that has passed even years later, and it's a remarkable and unique connection.
It certainly is. Thank you for that. We did get an email from Joe in Chippewa Falls. He says that, just as a reminder, which you already know, is that you do kidney transplants there. His wife recently was in Madison for her kidney transplant and infusions, and he was just surprised that it's actually more of an add-on than a transplant, finding out that they leave the bad one in and add the new one. Is that always the case, or just a certain types of procedures?
No, that's the normal for kidneys, but for a heart transplant, the old one comes out and the new one goes in its place.
Sure. How long does that, in general, I mean, obviously it's going to be different for everybody, but how long is that procedure for transplanting a heart?
I tell patients and families, I count on always at least, 8 to 10 hours, kind of start to finish. It can be a little bit shorter than that, not much less than 6. And it can be 20 plus.
Oh my gosh. How do you do that for yourself? How do you keep yourself going in that situation? I mean, with your other contemporaries.
Well, it's a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's rarely, only one surgeon involved in any of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And there are periods of the procedure where it's, ultra mission critical and everybody's there. And then there's periods of that time in the operating room where we can give each other some breaks to use the bathroom and get some
little food.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Gary has a question in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, hello. See, I've recently been diagnosed with vasculitis, and I'm told that it's incurable, except that a bone marrow transplant may cure it. But I was also warned away from that because I was told that a bone marrow transplant was quite dangerous and could be life-threatening, and I'm just wondering what your guest has to say about that, if he has an opinion about this.
Do either of you have experience with this particular procedure?
I personally do not. Bone marrow transplantation is really separate from solid organ transplantation. And furthermore, I'm, as a pediatric heart transplant cardiologist, I would be way out of my area of expertise to comment.
Okay. Well, thank you. And Gary, best of luck with you.
Good luck.
Hopefully things will work out. What are some of the long-term side effects of organ transplant? Dr. Hermson, what's your comment on that?
That's a great question. And I tell all the patients, really, transplant is great, but it's not a cure. And we're kind of trading one disease for another. And usually that's a very good trade. And the patients like that trade. But being a transplant recipient isn't a normal state of health because of the medicines that we have to use to knock down the immune system to keep from rejecting the organs, which is the kind of the main, the main thing. Dr. Kamani probably has some more detail and advice on that as well.
Go ahead.
I agree with what you said, and you put it very eloquently there. It's treating one disease for another.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have to come see doctors and get tests and labs and be on medicines lifelong to prevent rejection of the organ.
So you both deal with pediatrics. So hopefully your patients have a nice long life, but does that mean that down the road that they'll probably have to have another one, or what are the chances?
Yeah, that's actually counseling I give right up front, just because it is a lifelong process. The average heart transplant in pediatrics lasts about 15 years before folks need a second transplant. There are certainly folks who have lived to adulthood and had 2-3 heart transplants during their lifetime. And with each time, there's a reevaluation and looking into what all the options are with that, but it certainly isn't unusual.
Mm-hmm. And we did get a comment from, a question actually, from Gary and Ripon. He couldn't stay with us, but he's wondering about the costs of these transplants. Is this covered by insurance? And I suppose it varies per person. What are we talking about?
Yeah, usually insurance is pretty heavily involved. And then depending on what the financial review is, there's also other assistance programs. So it's really working directly with the transplant center for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we've got a call from Randy in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, I was, I received a kidney transplant at UW Health in 2013. I had vasculitis and my kidneys stopped functioning. They got fibrosis or whatever, necrosis, whatever you want to call it. And unfortunately, that has now failed, and I'm in the process of an evaluation for a second kidney transplant. I know I was a little bit disappointed because I think I was under the norm. They expect them to last 12 to 15 years or maybe longer, but in this case, it didn't. I really don't have a question, but I just called into the show to see if there's any comments. So.
Okay, thank you, Randy.
Yep.
Do either of you
thanks
want-
for sharing your story.
Yeah, and best of luck. And, you know, certainly that's when there's an average, there's always people above and below. But hopefully we can, the team here can, you know, get you another kidney and get you back to better.
And now with kidneys, obviously you can still give when you are alive. So that's a different, is there any other organs that you can do that with?
Liver.
Liver. Oh, wow. So you can take part of it and, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and that's something, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was gonna say, UW Health does have a living donor program.
They do, okay.
As well, and there's not too many centers out there that have that. So we'll give a little PR out there for our kidney and liver program.
Sure, because there's lots of testing that is involved with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So it was Clara, our producer here. She was talking about growing transplants, you know, organs and things. And I know there's work on that. Have either of you seen anything that's looking really, really good as far as maybe we'll be able to grow our own heart at some point?
That is such an exciting avenue for our field. And it's nothing that is probably within the next couple of years coming out, but certainly hopeful in the next 10, 20 years that things will look different. I'm sure everyone has also read the stories about the pig heart and another what we call xenotransplantation. So animal organs being transplanted into humans and everything. And that's another pretty heavily investigated area within our field.
Dr. Hermsen, what are your thoughts on having that availability?
Oh, that would be such a blessing. I mean, the you know, if we had organs essentially on the shelf, you know, or that we could grow, you know, and really if you're growing it, then, you know, the holy grail is to sort of tailor an organ to the patient that they won't reject and don't need those rejection medicines. And then that would really be a game changer. So I think if you look at human history, that's probably going to happen. Don't know when.
But there does seem to be a lot. It seems to be like advancing a little bit more quickly than it had been. So good luck for everybody out there. We've got a caller, Rona in Cameron. What's your question?
Hi, good afternoon. So I'm very curious to find out, there must be a network of organ donation places that transfer and transport hearts and kidneys all over the United States. And I'm wondering how a person gets selected or rejected from a program. So just threw a whole lot at you there.
Thanks.
A lot of curiosity.
Thanks, Rana. Which one of you want to attack that one?
Yeah, there is. There are multiple organizations, some of them government-based, some of them contract with the government to kind of organize all that work. And, you know, basically when a patient has become brain dead and the family has, honored their wish to become an organ donor, then those organs are evaluated through a pretty standard kind of medical, you know, testing process in an expeditious fashion. And then, you know, there's what's called a match run of possible recipients that would match up with that donor. And then there's a system where, we would be called to see if this particular donor's organs would work for a patient that we have on the list. And then we can either accept or reject that. But it's a very It's a pretty well-oiled machine and has worked well in its current form for decades with minor tweaks.
I think people are just amazed that, you know, you run around with a cooler and and you've got this amazing thing in it. And yeah, they love that story. People love that story. So thank you. What is the actual process of deciding when it's time for a transplant, when nothing else is gonna work? Yeah, Dr. Hermsen.
Oh, no, I was pointing. This is Dr.
Oh, you were pointing up.
I think he's different.
Just so folks know that we're in like a Zoom call. So our little boxes are, you know, Brady Bunched, but go right ahead, Dr.
Yeah,
Kamani.
That's a pretty deep question. So thank you for that. So as far as deciding that it's time to do a transplant, there's really a lot, obviously, that goes into that. Very briefly, I would say it's how is the kid doing? How's the family doing? What really are the risks and benefits with everything? And we recognize that as much as we are advocating transplant, it's a big deal. And
yes,
it's a big endeavor to take on. So really making sure our patient and family are as well supported and ready as they can be. No one's ever like 100%, yeah, sign me up. Really just optimizing everything.
Yeah, I can't imagine all of the things that go through a family's mind when they're thinking about this major decision. What kind of support is available at the center?
Oh, we've got an amazing team. So we have child life psychology, our amazing ICU nurses and staff, just really wonderful people that are just so dedicated to the care of kids, the cardiology team. It's an incredible multidisciplinary team sport, really to support a family and to support a child.
And Dr. Hermsen, how enmeshed are you in the patient, you know, from beginning to through the surgery?
Well, I think we tell the patients that we kind of become part of their family during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the patients in pediatrics especially are in the hospital waiting for their transplant. So then we're, you know, seeing them every day and caring for them. And sometimes that's a more or less active process, especially from a surgeon's point of view. But like Dr. Kermani said, it's a huge team and it really takes a village. And but we're very involved. It's not just they go on the list and then we call them up when their number comes up and then we kind of reacquaint. It's much more intimate than that.
Great. Well, that's always comforting, I would think, with the patients to know that they have another advocate there. And real quickly, before we wrap things up, what about adults as far as hearts? When is that decided or how is that decided when they go on that list?
Oh, yeah, very similar process. And there are different diseases that lead to heart transplant in adults as well. And sometimes that's sort of a decades long lead up. Sometimes it's very acute. You know, the gentleman I mentioned earlier had no heart disease until he had, you know, a heart that didn't work at all, or at least it didn't have heart disease he knew about. So it's variable, but the process is the same. We have a whole team of people that evaluate each patient and you know, working with that patient and their family, try to decide if the risks and the benefits for that patient favor transplantation or other treatments, and we go from there.
Okay. And Dr. Kermani, one more time where people can find out more about the center?
Yeah, so you can essentially Google and check out UW Health Transplant Center. Or feel free to call up the UW Health Transplant Center too for more information. And Dr. Hermsen's reminding me it's uwhealth.org.
Very uncomplicated. Thank you very much. And I believe we do have a link on our program note too. So if anybody wants to go with the program note, where obviously you can rehear this or send it to someone who you think needs to hear it too. So thank you both so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. And come back and let us know how things are going in the world of transplants. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
We've been talking with Dr. Sonia, I actually didn't ask her what the difference was, Kermani, a UW Health pediatric cardiologist and assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics Division of Cardiology at the UW School of Health, Medicine and Public Health, and Dr. Joshua Hermson, a UW Health Kids pediatric cardiac surgeon and associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Department of Surgery. And I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry.